This is Economics for Entrepreneurs, the podcast where we apply the principles of economics to help you make the best decisions for your life and business. Here's your host, Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. Welcome to Economics for Entrepreneurs. Today, we are talking about entrepreneurial decision-making. There are several reasons why decision-making is particularly challenging for entrepreneurs. First, you can't forecast the future. Whatever decision you make may or may not have the result you want for it, and there's no way of predicting. You typically don't have a long history of what works and what doesn't, so you can't simply project past results forwards, as many big corporations do in their planning process. You also typically have highly constrained resources, so your decision-making flexibility is narrow. You can't experiment with a lot of different options, so each decision has a huge opportunity cost. If you do X, you can't possibly also do Y. You don't have a big staff doing research for you, and you're probably operating with a highly limited information set. And you're pressured for time. You have to make a speedy decision before you can really weigh up all the aspects of your choice. Can economics help? We advocate that the proper application of economic principles to entrepreneurial businesses will make those businesses more successful. What does economics know about decision making? Well, it knows a lot, and there are principles that are potentially helpful. But as always, it's not the mathematical spreadsheet-based economics of the mainstream that's helpful, but the human-based, individualistic, and creative economics of the Austrian school that is the source of wisdom for us. Peter Klein is an economist who has studied entrepreneurship closely, including the challenges of entrepreneurial decision-making. He's not an ivory tower economist. He teaches at business school, and he works closely with management and entrepreneurs all over the world. He's written extensively about the kinds of problem-solution approaches we're going to discuss today. Peter, hello.
Hi, Hunter. Nice to be with you again.
Well, welcome back. We're talking today about entrepreneurial decision-making, and we want to do that in a way that helps entrepreneurs to manage. We're talking about, as raw material, a paper that you wrote on how entrepreneurs deal with uncertainty, but also all the research that you and your colleagues have done in this field over the years. You're an acknowledged expert in this field, and we look forward to benefiting from that expertise. So let's start with the economic idea of uncertainty. So in my words, that would be a situation that all entrepreneurs face all the time, in the sense that they have to make decisions with limited information. They never have enough information. Make decisions between two or more alternative actions or alternative paths without knowing the consequences. And they have to choose between scarce resources because they can't do everything. If I hire another salesperson, I've got to cut my Facebook advertising budget, for example. So let's get off to a solid start, and please define uncertainty as an economist would think about it.
Well, you just gave a very succinct description of what business decision-making or entrepreneurial decision-making is all about, and really what all human action deals with in the broader sense. Mises titled his great treatise, Human Action. And one of the interesting things about the Austrian school's approach to entrepreneurship is how it does view entrepreneurial decision-making as really just a subset of human decision-making in general, right? We live in a world that has many predictable features, but at the same time is not, it's not a computer simulation, at least I hope it isn't. it's not a machine, it's organic. We are dealing with lots of human beings all around the globe, interacting with them in ways directly and indirectly that we are not always fully aware of. So we live in a complicated world, right? I know that when I turn the steering wheel to the left on my car, most of the time that's going to make the car respond in a particular way. If we didn't have any kind of structure to our world, we wouldn't be able to drive. But at the same time, you know, I don't know for sure, will I get to my destination on time? Will I get to my destination at all? Will I have car trouble and accident and so forth? So I think for business decision making, we also are kind of in this this middle ground, right? There's some aspects of what entrepreneurs do that are fairly routine and can be anticipated, you know, in sort of a reasonable way. But there are lots of other things where we really, you know, we may have no idea what kind of outcomes to expect, or we really can't put very precise weights or probabilities on particular outcomes. So to answer your question, most economists, Austrian economists, think about uncertainty or like to distinguish uncertainty from pure probabilistic risk. So if I have a normal six-sided die and I throw the die, you know, I know a lot about that situation. I know there are six sides, and I know that one of those six sides will be on top. I don't know what number I'll hit, but I know there are six possible numbers. And if it's an unweighted die, the probability of getting any particular number is 1/6. So that's a situation of probabilistic risk. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's a very well-defined problem, and I can put a precise mathematical estimate on one particular outcome occurring. Uncertainty describes cases where we may have some knowledge about the situation and we can act in a way that is reasonable, but we cannot list all of the possible outcomes, nor can we attach a precise mathematical probability to each. You know, to use your example, you want to increase your you know, social media advertising budget. You know that that might increase your sales. It might not increase your sales. You know that those are resources you cannot use on some other activity that might have yielded an even higher benefit. And you can make reasonable, educated guesses about what is likely to happen and make a sort of rational decision based on that. But it's not like rolling dice. We don't have the same kind of mathematical precision when we're dealing with the real messy world of human action than we do when we're playing games or working on, you know, simulating something on a computer or whatever.
Well, that's great context, Peter, for decision making. So thank you. And I often feel that entrepreneurs fear decision making because it's possible to be wrong. But one of the points you make in your paper is that you shouldn't think of decision making in that sense of forks in the road, right and wrong, go left or go right, or do X and not Y. In the sense of once you made the decision, there's no revisiting it.
Sure.
In fact, you say in the paper that a better approach is what you call a continuous and dynamic process with feedback and learning loops and interdependence, you say. So tell us a little bit about that dynamic decision-making process that you described.
Yeah, I mean, that's just fancy language for the common sense idea that, you know, we're human beings living in the real world. We're continually making decisions. We're not making a once and for all decision. Most of the times in our lives, we try out different things. We experiment. We see what kind of results we get. And then we make adjustments and try again. You know, you want to go out to dinner to a nice Italian restaurant. You don't know which restaurant you'll enjoy. Now you do have, you know, it's not pure blind guessing because you have Yelp reviews and you can drive by and take a look at the place from the outside. You can ask your friends. Maybe you recall having eaten there in the past. So you have some information on which to make a decision, but it's not perfect information. There's some uncertainty about whether you'll achieve your goal of a lovely evening or not. So you take a shot. You eat at a particular restaurant. But it's not like the game is over at that point. I mean, that's useful information that you can use in the future. I know more about what kinds of things I like and don't like. I know more about maybe this is a new city. I know more about this city. Maybe I'm dining with someone or a group of people I don't know that well. Now I know more about that person. In other words, we're always making decisions. Think how many decisions you make during the day without really being aware of it. And, you know, skilled entrepreneurs are good at sort of dealing with this continual flow of decisions, some of them large, some of them small, but making adjustments along the way. In a sporting event, right, we say, I'm a basketball fan. You and I were talking about basketball offline before. You know, in a college basketball game, you play, men's college basketball game, you play the first half, and then there's a halftime, and then you come out for the second half, and the commentators will say, well, you know, what adjustments do you think the coach of Team X needs to make to do better in the second half? And then you look and see how the team performs later. A good coach is continually trying out different things and changing those decisions, adjusting the decisions as we go. So that's what entrepreneurship is all about. Now, when economists and management scholars theorize about entrepreneurship, to make make the analysis simple, they often focus on a single discrete decision. Yeah, okay, that's fine. I mean, that may be a useful kind of analysis. But if we focus exclusively on those kind of discrete decision situations, we lose this broader context. And we might miss the fact that, well, looked at in isolation, the particular decision-making technique that you used, Hunter, doesn't seem to be the best. And the decision you ended up making looks foolish in retrospect. But that's not as important as sort of the system or process of decision-making that you use. We want to know, are we making this process of decisions in the best way possible? That's more important than looking at just one individual decision or another.
Right. So this continuous dynamic process, it's, I think we can get a sense for it as we think through some of the examples. We've done dining at Italian restaurants and we've done basketball. Let's see if we can get inside an entrepreneurial business. You use the term not just in the paper that we're referring to today, but elsewhere in your work, entrepreneurial judgment, which I think you talk about it in terms of reasoned action. So it's not just random; it's purposeful, as you've talked about in talking about human action. But it's a judgment about feasible outcomes. Is that a guess about what might happen as a consequence of the decision, or is it weighing up whatever data we've had, qualitative or quantitative? Tell us a little bit more about judgment in conducting that dynamic process.
Yeah, sure. I think of judgment as reasoned action in this context about particular business decisions, entrepreneurial decisions. You know, without access to a kind of a mechanistic formal framework like you would have in, you know, solving a math problem, right? So I don't, I try to avoid the term guessing because I think the notion of a guess to most people means it's really just sort of a blind guess. You're just, closing your eyes and, picking one thing over another. And that's not what we mean by judgment. What we mean by judgment is making the best decision that you can, given the information that is available to you and given your lack of certain knowledge about the future. Now, exactly what technique does the entrepreneur use to exercise judgment about a particular issue? You know, should I launch a new marketing campaign? Should I increase the price of my product or lower the price of my product? How much of my resources should I devote to research and development? Should I hire more employees or not? Should I launch my venture or not? Right? In each of these cases, there may be particular techniques, including quantitative techniques of forecasting and analysis, that are useful and appropriate to the entrepreneur. But really what my colleagues and I are trying to get at with the idea of judgment is this kind of ultimate responsibility or sort of residual decision making, right? You know, the old adage, I guess it was Truman who supposedly had a thing on his desk, the buck stops here. So to exercise judgment means at the end of the day, you're the person or you are part of a group of people who have to make that final decision, go or no go, yes or no, raise the price, lower the price, launch or don't launch. Now, there's lots of intermediate thinking and analysis and reasoning and decision making that goes into that. right? You consult with others, you may hire experts, you look at, you know, the data speak to you and so forth. Those are all inputs into decision making. But to exercise judgment means, you know, the buck stops with you. At some point, you have the ultimate responsibility for deciding how will these valuable resources in the entrepreneur's possession be used. Now, some people are very comfortable with having that kind of ultimate final responsibility. Some people are less comfortable with it and prefer to perform tasks that are delegated to them, right, by other people. So judgment, again, it's a kind of a multi-layered concept. Ultimately, to exercise judgment is to have this final responsibility under conditions of uncertainty. But you can also think about judgment or the process of judgment as being sort of like the way we described it before, a middle ground between formal mechanistic decision making at one extreme and sort of blind guessing at another extreme. And we often use words in everyday discourse like intuition or gut feel or gut instinct, right? The entrepreneur has access to lots of data and can perform lots of analysis, but at the end of the day, that decision is really going to be at least partly an intuitive decision. The entrepreneur may not be able to articulate the exact reasons why, you know, he or she prefers a course of action A over course of action B. And of course, if you were able to fully articulate that with a mathematical model, then you could pass the buck on to someone else who would make that decision, right? The reason the buck stops with you is because really it's your kind of intuitive judgment at the end of the day, rather than some kind of equation solving, you know, the answer to which we can all agree upon.
Yeah, we had Bob Luddy on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about decision-making. I quoted him something from Jeff Bezos, who said that in high-velocity decision-making, which Bezos favors, you make a decision with 70% of the information you need. And Bob Luddy said, 70%? You're damn lucky if you have 70%. Right. And you've got to make the decision. But the other point that he made is revisit all of your decisions at some point in time. You have to make the decision now because time is a factor. But you're never going to get everything right, as you've been saying. Go back and revisit it. And with new data, it can tell you, here's why you made the decision. Here's what happened differently than you thought it would. What could have been different? Or how can I revise my decision-making in the future?
Right.
So have you come across that?
That's completely correct. And some people find it useful to think about the metaphor of the scientist in the laboratory. It's not a perfect metaphor for entrepreneurial decision making, but there are some important parallels, right? You know, the scientist formulating a hypothesis about how, you know, something works in the natural world, performing an experiment, seeing if the hypothesis is confirmed or disconfirmed, and then revising the hypothesis in light of new information, right? One thing that is useful about that metaphor is not only that it gets at this idea of, you know, continually sort of testing your ideas against reality, right? We can think of the entrepreneur having some set of beliefs about what consumers will purchase and how much they'll be willing to pay and what kind of profits will result. But, you know, to use the baseball expression, reality bats last, right? I mean, maybe people won't buy the thing. They won't buy your thing. They won't pay as much as you thought they would pay. You don't receive the profits in the market that you expected. So the marketplace is kind of like the laboratory, right? The entrepreneur forms beliefs and then tests them against the reality of market competition, and then has to revise those beliefs as, you know, information about sales and profitability and so forth is revealed. Another thing I like about that metaphor is, you know, it's increasingly obvious now, especially in many areas of science, you know, that contrary to the sort of naive view that some of us learn in school, you know, science, and here I mean sort of the physical sciences, the natural sciences, biological sciences, and so forth, they're not perfect, right? Scientists make mistakes. Scientists can be biased in interpreting data. You know, there's a lot of human judgment involved even in pure science. What experiment do you perform? How do you design the experiment? What data, experimental data, do you collect? How do you interpret that data? What does it mean? When is a hypothesis, you know, how good do the results have to be for the hypothesis to be validated as opposed to contradicted? All of those are judgment calls. And I think that's increasingly obvious to people who study science. Well, all the more so for entrepreneurial decision-making. The entrepreneur may get it wrong. The interpretation may be wrong. Or to put it in a different way, the sorts of things that we can observe, the market results that we observe, sales and sales growth, profitability, market value of publicly traded assets and so forth. Those are kind of those measurements. They pick up a composite of different things that go into them, right? So I know that my revenues fell short of expectations. I know that my venture is unprofitable this quarter. Now, exactly why is it not profitable? Is it because my marketing wasn't right? Is it because there's something about the way I design my product? Is it some economy-wide, condition that's beyond my control? Is it that I don't have the right team in place? I mean, the data of the market do not reveal to the entrepreneur exactly why things didn't turn out as expected. So again, part of the role of the entrepreneur's judgment is to figure out, hey, what did we do and why did we do it and why did it not work the way we expected and what can we do differently to get a better result the next time?
Well, that's really helpful, I think, for entrepreneurs to think that way. And another piece of your work that I think is also helpful for entrepreneurs is the way that you explain that there are different kinds of uncertainties. And if I get this right, you look at uncertainty types defined by a set of options. What can the entrepreneur do? And a set of outcomes. What might happen as a result? And you create from that uncertainty types. And I wrote them down. I'm not sure we'll be able to talk about all of them today, but you talked about risk, which we've covered, ambiguity, environmental uncertainty, creative uncertainty, and what sounds pretty scary, absolute uncertainty. So maybe you could define those last
sure.
three
what,
pretty
quickly.
Sure.
One of my co-authors on that particular paper and I were trying to do is come up with a way of thinking about uncertainty to make it more useful for entrepreneurial decision-making. So, well, are there different kinds of uncertainty? Can we come up with a taxonomy of uncertainties that can be helpful to us? In a sense, when I distinguished before between risk, rolling the dice, and uncertainty, a real-world problem, that's a kind of a taxonomy, and it's often associated or most commonly associated with the famous American economist Frank Knight. So we were trying to do something in that same spirit, is to distinguish among different types of uncertainty or levels of uncertainty or manifestations of uncertainty. And it's really a pretty simple kind of two-by-two taxonomy, right? So and as you mentioned already, we thought, well, instead of thinking about, uncertainty being, large or small or scary or not scary, why not think about or distinguish among sort of the subject of the uncertainty? In other words, you are uncertain about what? What is it that you're uncertain about? And there may be some cases where, there's sort of a target outcome. You know the thing that you want to achieve, but you're not certain about what is the best means to accomplish that objective. That's what we call creative uncertainty. You know what you want to do, but there are lots of different ways to create the outcome. So, we're doing this podcast today, and we use a particular technology. I assume you're at your home in California. I'm in Texas, so we're using an online, recording system. In a case like that, we sort of know what we want to achieve, right? We want a reliable means of doing the podcast. We want a recording that has a certain audio quality, and the files can be passed back and forth and whatever, right? We sort of know what outcome we want, but there are lots of different products on the market that would allow us to achieve that particular goal. Which you know, what software should we use? What hardware should we use? Right. So many times an entrepreneur or a manager might have some particular technical problem to solve. We know we need to, you know, our product has this flaw. We know we need to fix that flaw. Or we definitely want a product available to the market that accomplishes this function. But there are lots of ways to build that mousetrap. How do we know what's the best way to build the mousetrap? Well, in this case, right, we think of a set of possibilities. Here are some possible solutions to our predefined problem. And we try to choose among those possibilities based on what we think is likely to lead us to the most efficient solution. So that's a case where, you know what you want to do, but there are lots of different ways that you could do it. At the other side of the taxonomy, you can imagine a case where, the decision is well specified, but the outcomes are wide open. So, for example, suppose that you're considering a manufacturing sort of outsourcing situation, right? You can produce, you can use in-house domestic production, or maybe you can outsource production to China or something like that. So, there's really only two options here. I can make this thing using method A, or I can make this thing using method B. Now, what is going to obtain from that in terms of not only, sales and profitability, but, the future direction of my company? I don't know how other firms will react. I don't know how, regulators might intervene and so forth. So it's a pretty simple decision, right? I only have one or two possible options, but the set of outcomes is very broad, is really wide open. So that's what we call environmental uncertainty. Now, these labels, may or may not be the best labels, but we're distinguishing between options and outcomes. So if the set of options is closed, there's only two or three things you can do. And the set of possible outcomes is also closed. There's, three possible outcomes. You can map those options into outcomes, and that's a fairly straightforward case of risk or ambiguity. When the set of options is open, but the set of outcomes is closed, right? There's only one thing I need to do, but lots of different ways to do it. That's what we call creative uncertainty. What we call environmental uncertainty describes a case where the set of options is closed. There's only two or three things I can do as options, but the set of outcomes is wide open. Now, of course, if you're following along, you realize, well, there's a fourth possibility too, right? What if the set of options is wide open and the set of outcomes is wide open? And in fact, there are many business decision contexts and many cases of entrepreneurship where everything's on the table, right? I just quit my job. I want to be self-employed. I want to start a new venture. Well, what kind of a venture am I going to start? Well, the sky may be almost the limit. What's going to happen as a result of my efforts? Well, who knows? Lots of different things could happen. Now, as you mentioned before, so that's what we call absolute uncertainty, and that sounds pretty scary. But really, the point of our exercise here is to say, okay, if you are in that situation where you can do almost anything, all options are on the table, and you really don't know how to characterize the set of possible outcomes. That's a very difficult situation, right? It's hard to get a handle on what's a sensible decision in that case. So what you can do instead of trying to tackle it all at once, you can sort of tackle one side or the other. In other words, you could say, well, let me focus first on possible options. What are some things I can do? What are some things I know how to do? What are some resources that are available to me? What are some kinds of companies maybe that are popular in my area that are feasible from a legal point of view, whatever. So I start by sort of trying to restrict the set of options from everything being on the table to just a few things being on the table. Okay, so I start by restricting my set of options, transforming the situation from something like absolute uncertainty to something more like environmental uncertainty. Right. Let me start by restricting the set of options, and then I can think about possible outcomes that might result. But there's another path as well. Right. And I could also start by saying, well, let me choose an outcome as my target outcome. Let me restrict the set of outcomes first, then figure out what's the best way to hit that particular target. So that's starting with a situation of absolute uncertainty and trying to reduce it to what we call creative uncertainty and then acting. So that's kind of the potential use of the taxonomy is to help entrepreneurs figure out or sort of describe the kind of uncertainties that they face and then work on, you know, mitigating or resolving or reducing the uncertainty kind of one step at a time, rather than trying to deal with uncertainty about everything all at the same time.
Good. So let's see if we can delve into a couple of practical examples and maybe a case history to further help our entrepreneurs. And tell me if I'm translating this correctly. So I can think of a situation when you're in the process of advertising and promoting a product. You know what the end is that you're pursuing. I want, let's say, a million people to buy my product at $5 a piece. So I've got a clear outcome. I don't know how the mind of the consumer works, so I'm not sure exactly how to persuade them. So I hire a marketing agency or a promotion agency, maybe I hire several of them, and I ask them to come up with six ideas each. So now I've got a plethora of ideas, and I go through a process of first judgment, to use your word. I like that one. I don't like this other one. But I've still got a few options, so I test them in some manner that gets me some data. More people said they like this approach than that approach. And eventually I make a choice and I can put my budget against one of those and then see if I sell my million units. That sounds to me like constructing a process to start with a lot of options but end with one or a small number. Is that a practical example of resolving creative uncertainty?
I think that's a perfect example, right? And maybe you started in a situation where you really didn't have a set of goals in mind, but first you established those, right? We want to sell this many units. We want to hit this revenue target, whatever. Now, how do I achieve that? Well, there are lots of possible options. And rather than just sort of blindly guessing, right, which is what people think, people think that the alternative to fully rational decision making is blind guessing. No, we're not doing that. We try to restrict the set of options to a reasonable number, right? In your example, maybe by hiring an expert, right? Give me five or six possibilities that I can think about and analyze and among which I can choose. We might look at examples of what our rivals are doing, right? To come up with possibilities. We might look at the history in our industry. We might do some brainstorming about possible strategies. But we try to look. I mean, human decision making is not perfect, and we cannot handle sort of infinite levels of complexity. So we're trying to reduce and simplify and come up with heuristics that are that are helpful to us. And so restricting the set of options to some manageable number, in your example, maybe by coming up with different possibilities and then doing some kind of feasibility analysis of each, is exactly the right way to get started. And then, as you say, from a process point of view, right, we pick one and we try it out and we realize we didn't hit our target, we didn't come close. Okay, well, now let's go back and revisit those possibilities again. Did we choose the best among those possibilities and something else went wrong? Or maybe, did we make an unwise choice and we want to revisit some of those other possibilities and make a different choice? So that's a perfect example. To give you another example dealing with so-called environmental uncertainty. Suppose we have a lot of inventory. We have unsold inventory. Or maybe we have some materials and supplies, or maybe we have a team in place, right? I mean, the truth is we often, when entrepreneurs, say an individual goes to try to establish a new venture, well, you start with a team, a core team, a founding team, and these are not people chosen at random, right? These are usually people with whom you already have some kind of relationship, maybe previous professional colleagues, friends, neighbors, family members, right? So you start with kind of a particular team, right? So the question is, you know, what is the best strategy that we can pursue to achieve profitability given this team, or given this unsold inventory, or given these particular materials or this particular capital budget that we have, right? So that's more like a situation of environmental uncertainty. We have particular means. There are lots of ends to which those means could be applied. So again, we have an iterative kind of process, right? We think of some possible goals or targets or outcomes, and we narrow that down to a reasonable set, and we choose among them, and then we direct the resources of our team and so forth towards achieving that particular end. You know, in other words, if things don't work out the way that you expect, you're not going to just fire the entire team. You're not going to start over with a brand new team, because it's difficult to put a team together, and you've got some, you know, you've invested some effort and time together. You've developed some team capabilities and so forth. Rather, what you might do in that case is revisit this set of possible outcomes. Say, okay, maybe we didn't anticipate this outcome. It wasn't the outcome that we expected. Are we okay with this outcome? No. Well, let's think about a different strategy to try to hit another one of our anticipated potential outcomes.
Well, that's a great illustration of environmental uncertainty. Let's see if we can close with your case study on Netflix, which was a wonderful example of dynamic, complex, absolute uncertainty, where what Netflix was doing, their options, in fact, the business they were in kept changing, and the output kept changing. Right. The markets changed around them, consumer behavior changed, everything changed. So maybe I know it's a very complex story, but maybe sum that up as absolute uncertainty.
I think what we were trying to illustrate with Netflix is how, you know, you can sometimes move, you know, as you iterate, you may find yourself in a different kind of uncertainty situation than the one that you were in before. In other words, you could start with a condition of absolute uncertainty and then, you know, try to move in the direction of creative uncertainty. But then something happens in the marketplace and all of a sudden you find yourself in a different situation than you expected, because of something a competitor did, because of changes in technology, and now you find yourself in a situation of environmental uncertainty using a different kind of decision heuristic than the one that you used before. And I think Netflix nicely illustrates this kind of it was not a smooth and continuous path from the founding of the company to now, right? But a lot of sort of jumps back and forth around different, you know, sort of places in our diagram. Right. And, you know, the old timers in the audience will remember the days of VHS tapes and DVDs and so forth. Right. But the original founders, Reed Hastings, was the first CEO, was already in he wanted to start some kind of a tech company, some sort of Internet company. This is in the late 90s during the dot-com boom. Everyone was doing something related to the internet, and his first idea was direct shipping of VHS tapes, and decided in other words, you could say, well, they started out in a situation of absolute uncertainty and then tried to reduce that to a situation that's more like creative uncertainty. They experimented with doing online VHS rentals, and there were a lot of problems with the shipping cost was high and the return rates were low, and they thought, you know, look, a big bulky heavy VHS tape is not an easy thing to stick in the mail. But then a new potential option enters the scene, the DVD, right? A DVD, you can stick it in an envelope and you can mail it almost just like you would mail a letter. So it turned out that the model of direct shipping might actually work well with a DVD rather than with something like a VHS. So the rent by DVD model, right, struggled a little bit, but eventually began to take off. But the founders realized that the real value added was not in the shipping of the DVD per se, but in the sort of customer profile information that could be constructed by looking at the rentals, by looking at what people rented and figuring out what they would be more likely to want in the future. They were also experimenting with the pricing model, right? Do you charge per rental, or do you have a monthly subscription model with, and the one that eventually became the most profitable for Netflix was paying a flat monthly subscription fee for as many discs as you want. Partly what they discovered is that people kept the discs much longer than they thought they were going to keep the discs. People were lazy and didn't get around to watching or returning. And so the operating costs for Netflix were lower than anticipated. What Netflix quickly discovered, of course, as we all know now, is that there was an alternative technology emerging on the horizon, right? So as streaming technologies became better, and the equipment and transmission technology got faster and so forth, they found themselves in a situation where once again there was a lot of technological uncertainty about what sort of business model was right. So just when you think you have it all figured out, we have a profitable, DVD by mail business, the whole technology, available technology for media suddenly changed. And they found themselves once again in a situation of higher levels of uncertainty and even in absolute uncertainty. What did they do? Well, they had to figure out a way of coming up with a new technology for delivering videos and other media content to people, using what were now available as streaming solutions with better servers and faster internet speeds and so forth. And we described this journey in a little bit more detail in the paper, which you can link, which we can direct our readers to. The point of the story is, it's never a case that you start in absolute uncertainty and in one step, or I should say almost never, in one step, boom, all uncertainties are resolved. And now we're in a situation where we can easily manage some small, perceptible risks. I mean, that almost never happens. Even if it does happen, all of a sudden something in the environment will change. And what you thought were simple and easy to manage risks turn out to be much broader and deeper uncertainties. Your competitors have taken new actions. Consumers have changed their preferences. Technology has changed. Maybe something in the culture or in politics and government has changed. So, this goes back to our original notion of a continual process, right? That the entrepreneur is always evaluating the degree of uncertainty in the environment, the degree of uncertainty about possible options that are available, and trying to find the best path, trying to mitigate those uncertainties as best as he can or she can, in an ongoing sort of continual basis. That's one of the reasons why working with entrepreneurs and teaching entrepreneurship is such a challenge, right? We can provide some useful heuristics for helping entrepreneurs to handle these kinds of situations and to classify the circumstances that they're in. But at the ultimate, ultimately at the end of the day, there's experimentation, there's feedback, and there's that need for the decision maker to rely on his or her, gut instinct about what's the best thing to do.
Well, I really think, Peter, you've advanced economics beyond the so-called rational choice theory, in which Homo economicus, as entrepreneur, weighs the mathematical probabilities of each course of action. That's an unsatisfactory way to describe decisions in the real world. And we're trying to help entrepreneurs here. So you've given us a different framework. As you've said, we are not advising them to learn probability theory and all the mathematics around it, but to make decisions in the face of uncertainty. And as you say, create opportunity from that uncertainty by using judgment, but also by developing a kind of process where they can get that market feedback, they can react to it, they can make changes along the way. And so they shouldn't fear decision-making, they should be confident about decision-making, but also they should have a process to narrow the options, narrow the possible outcomes, and just make the possibility more likely to be the one that they want. So let me ask you if that's a good summary, and we'll quickly sign off, I think.
Yeah, that's Hunter, that's a terrific summary. And I think these kinds of, you know, this tension between sort of, you know, acting with mathematical precision and relying on intuition or instinct. I mean, it's very salient today, especially because we hear so much about artificial intelligence and machine learning and so forth. But, you know, if you talk to the experts on AI, the more we know about what machines can do, the more apparent it is that there are some things machines cannot do, right? So we human beings, we set up the parameters within which the machines operate, right? But at the end of the day, it's up to us to delegate certain tasks to a computer and to withhold certain tasks for ourselves, for human judgment. I think a good, you know, use of these sort of quantitative techniques and algorithms and so forth, when used well, are complements to human judgment, but certainly not substitutes for them. So I would encourage all of our entrepreneur listeners out there to make use of the best available analytical techniques, to make use of computers and algorithms and so forth where appropriate. But to remember that, you know, we don't live in that kind of a world. We don't live in a world of mathematical certainty. We live in this world of deep uncertainty, not unmanageable uncertainty, not uncertainty that's so severe that, you know, we should be afraid or reluctant to act, but rather, you know, a world in which we can use these aids and tools and heuristics that we've been talking about to make the most reasonable decision that the entrepreneur can make at that time, and for the entrepreneur to be flexible and open to learning from experience and adjusting and making different decisions as time goes by.
Good, Peter. That's terrific. Thank you very much. We'll leave it there and we'll sign off and we'll talk again. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.